Is it Wednesday, Mark?
It is Wednesday. At least it was when we started recording. I'm actually not sure what day it is now.
It may well be Sunday, but who knows? It's time for... Well, let's play the music.
Questions, smestions.
First one from Marlo in Sintra, Portugal.
Yes.
Dear Ellie and Joel, last week in reviewing The Five Devils, Mark talked about the extreme emotional reactions on display at film festivals, five-minute standing ovations being regular.
Yeah.
This sparked some very fond memories on my part, as in a previous life, wistful sigh off camera, I was lucky enough to be a film reviewer for The Economist. We haven't had anyone from The Economist on for ages.
I know. They've abandoned us.
At the Sundance and Telluride film festivals between 1999 and 2007. I absolutely vouch for Mark's take on festival audiences. I recall many long bouts of applause and whoops and hollering. We love yous. No boos, probably because in America, everyone's a winner. For my part...
Baby.
I saw mostly good stuff. Early on, I was given an excellent piece of advice. Write about the films you really love. This was brilliant for two reasons. One, it made my writing my reviews actually enjoyable. And two, I learnt the art of walking out of a screening if the movie was no good or didn't grab me. Some quick maths for you, or math, he says. average four features a day.
You know that's because in America they only do math. We do maths, but they do the simple version.
Four features a day plus shorts plus the occasional midnight screening times 13 days, 10 for Sundance, 3 for Telluride, times 8 years equals a lot. Unsurprisingly, I only remember the really good films and parties. Metallica in front of 500 sweating, breathless souls and Sigur Rós in a packed out 200-person venue. That would have been amazing. And I certainly don't remember any of the films that I gave up on except one. And we return again to Lost in Translation.
Wow.
It's second mention in your takes for this week. It was August the 29th, 2003, and day two of the Telluride Film Festival. I believe it was a mid-afternoon screening. I took my usual spot in the front row. I'm 6'4", so I like a bit of legroom. Blimey, you wouldn't want to sit behind. I didn't know much about the film. I practiced a minimalist policy of reading the festival blurb and trusting to instinct.
Yeah.
I may have clocked that it was Sofia Coppola, but I probably... picked it because it had Bill Murray in. Maybe I'd heard mutterings about it on the street. Well, the film begins and right away I groaned. The opening shot of Scarlett Johansson's bum in pink undies just annoyed me. Talk about the male gaze. Then there was Bill Murray glooming around in the hotel bar, Johansson doing pretty much the same. I thought, well, you're both in Tokyo. What's the problem? So I gave it about 20 minutes, then gathered my supply of press releases and made my way up the aisle towards the exit and walked right past the shocked glare of Sofia Coppola, who was standing at the back. If you're going to walk out of a film... She was watching a film on its official world premiere. Needless to say, my editor was a bit miffed. And when I watched the film in full a few months later, I was suitably... Would you say chagrined?
Chagrined.
Yeah. Okay, I'm an idiot. It's a good movie. There's some genuinely good stuff in there, but I had my rules and I stuck to them. So my schmestion or question, not sure, has Mark ever walked out of a screening, specifically at a film festival, and if so, has he later regretted it? As a final note, a few weeks ago, my 15-year-old son went with some mates to see Cocaine Bear. Proud to say that after an hour he walked out, he texted me to say it was the worst film with the best title he'd ever seen. Anyway.
That's not true. The worst film with the best title you've ever seen is Surf Nazis Must Die.
Okay, fair enough. So, but the main point is, has Mark ever walked out of a screening, specifically at a film festival, and if so, has he later regretted it?
Well, I mean, I have told several times the story about walking out of Blue Velvet. That wasn't at a film festival. It was when it was screening at Corner House, and it hit me completely the wrong way, and I hated it, and I walked out of it. I was probably stormed out of it. And then... sometime later, I was persuaded to go back and watch it again, and I realized that, in fact, it's a masterpiece, and I had just completely misjudged it. And I have always borne that in mind because it reminds me that, you know, a film that really gets under your skin can often produce very, very strange responses. And, you know, it's possible... You can love a movie and you can hate a movie, but sometimes the movies that are really interesting are the movies that you love and hate at the same time. And I have a rule about not walking out of things because I think if I've started, if I walk out of it, I won't be able to review it. I do think if you walk out of a film, you can't review it because you don't, you know, you have to give the film. I walked out of Bad Boy Bubby and I've never reviewed it because I just can't be bothered, to be honest.
I missed the last 2 minutes of John Wick 4, but I
think that doesn't count as walking out. No. I mean, you've been there for 3 hours.
Yes.
I think, you know, you got the gist.
I did.
But so, no, the Blue Velvet, I mean, the Blue Velvet thing is really important to me because it taught me a lesson. It taught me that you know, that very extreme responses to things are often very telling. And I'll repeat this. I interviewed Lars von Trier. I went to where his studios are in Foreign, and I felt the need to tell him. I was interviewing him about Melancholia, which I liked, but I felt the need to tell him how much I hated The Idiots. And I did walk out of The Idiots in Cannes. That was when I got thrown out of The Idiots in Cannes for shouting at the screen in very bad French. I've told you that story. And I stood up. I then went back and saw the whole of the film before I ever, because I had to do an introduction for it at some point. And I know I still don't like it. I actually stand by my initial response. But, you know, hey. And I said, you know, I really hate that film. And he said, but do you really hate it? And I said, I really hate it. He said, but do you really hate it? And I said, I absolutely hate it. He said, good, we'll get on. And what he didn't want was just, it's all right, you know. And the Blue Velvet thing really taught me that sometimes a film can just get under your skin and you're not quite sure why. I mean, we've had people writing emails saying that they suddenly found themselves affected by something in a way that they didn't expect.
Yes, and I think at that point I probably mentioned an American writer, I think he's passed away now, called Frederick Buechner, who always said, if you're surprised by tears, take a note of that moment because it is important. It is symbolizing something.
Well, in my, you know, I'm in therapy, have been for a while now. And one of the things that you learn is that you'll be talking about something that you don't think is of any import at all. And then suddenly you can't speak because you're suddenly overwhelmed by something. And it's often exactly that thing you said. Just repeat for me that phrase that he said. When you are?
I think I'm paraphrasing it.
No, sure.
But he talks about if you are ever surprised by tears, you should stop and take note because it is symbolizing something.
Yeah, exactly. And it is really odd how something will suddenly come out. You don't know what it is. And you say, okay, fine. If it hurts, it works. You know, it what is going on there? And films will often do that. And one of the responses to that is, I'm not having this. And just get up and leave. And sometimes it's because the film is really bad. The reason I don't walk out of things anymore if I don't like them is that I can just be bored. You know, I mean, I'll sit through Transformers 2, 3, whatever it is. I'm just bored. There's no point in walking out. But the things that actually make you go, no, no, no. I mean, sometimes, like I said, with Bad Boy Bubby, they were being cruel to a cat in real life. And I was just like, I'm sorry, I don't need this.
But if, as you said many times, if you get from a movie what you bring to it,
yes,
then if your circumstances change, then it's not a surprise that you're then going to reevaluate a film because you might be bringing a whole bunch of different stuff few years down the track.
No, exactly.
Marlo, thank you for that. Dear Marisol and Tommy, says Paul, short-term listener, member of the Vanguard, I agree with many listeners that what makes your show stand out are your large hearts and the fact that you care.
Large dark hearts.
Yes.
Piece of coal.
I just want a perfectly shaped, I don't want an enlarged heart at all.
No, I'd like it not to be enlarged.
Just normal.
Yeah.
It comes across in the whole ethos of the show and especially in the non-film bits. I'm writing in about a man called Otto that I have just watched.
Okay.
I don't remember crying. Okay, it was more about crying. I don't remember crying that much through a film ever. And I'm not normally a gusher. It's probably only the fourth time I have cried in a film. I don't know if it was the film alone or knowing that its influence may have saved one of your listeners' lives. I suspect both. See previous takes for information on that. I just wonder if we are underestimating what a powerful and amazing film A Man Called Otto is on so many levels. The cut scenes to the past are probably what I wanted more of, as well as learning more about Sonia. The inclusion of Malcolm is a lovely touch to help us know more about her and understand Otto better, because we learned through the movie about Otto's wife who's passed away, and which is why Otto's in a bit of a state.
So you understand the reason for how he is who he is.
Yes. I don't know if you've watched Otto again since you received that email. I wonder if it may have changed your evaluation of the film. It has certainly touched me and made me question some of my own grumpy and stubbornness. It doesn't quite work. Anyway, tinkety-tog, up with kindness and consideration. I have seen it twice. Once prior to doing the interview with Tom.
Yeah.
I mean, I say Tom because he calls me Simon. And also then as a family, we did a family viewing. So I didn't need to reevaluate it because I thought it was great. I mean, I was obviously when you get emails that tell you the profound effect that it had on them and their family or whatever, then you do look at it in a slightly different way. But it's interesting that it maybe it is one of those films which people will talk about for a long time.
Yeah, entirely possible.
And also the book had a fantastic impact, you know, and was a huge bestseller precisely for those reasons. So the question is, have you watched it again?
No.
Okay, there's the answer. It's not much of a question, there you go. Matthew in London. Dear Mind's Eye and Inner Monologue, I am hesitant to send this email as finding out you have this can result in a minor existential crisis.
Okay.
But hey-ho. Mm-hmm. Rather late in life, I've discovered I have a condition called aphantasia, written A-P-H-A-N-T and then Asia. It means you cannot visualize something in your mind's eye. When you imagine something, all you see is blackness.
Okay.
It also can mean you have no inner monologue. I was of the opinion that this is just what everyone experienced and only discovered that's not the case recently. One interesting side effect, though, is that horror films simply don't affect me. I can watch people getting torn apart before bed, simply close my eyes and not be haunted by any of the images I've seen. My ex, however, was tortured by nasty images the second she closed her eyes and hence preferred not to watch horror films. I'd love to hear from anyone else who has this condition, especially if this email is how you found out. And does it affect your film viewing experience? Can you remember films well? Do you enjoy horror? So, Matthew, this is a question, I suppose it's, I haven't heard of aphantasia.
No, me neither. I had not heard of it. And we said you can't visualize things and...
So when you try and imagine something, all you see is blackness. So you have no inner monologue.
Sorry, what does that mean, no inner monologue?
I imagine that because you can't not discuss things with yourself. You can't think, you know, if you've got to think things through... I don't know. What does no... Because an inner monologue is something that you have in a book or in a film.
Yes. And in fact, I wonder where she's going, he thought.
Yeah. And in fact, the interview that we had with Mia Hansen-Løve, she talks about when she's filming Les Seduits, she's talking about her filming her interior.
That you can see what's going on.
That's precisely what she's doing. So presumably, if you don't have... And in a monologue, maybe that's what... But mainly he's saying, I don't have an imagination. All I see is blackness. What? But so the whether that is anything to do with the fact that horror movies have absolutely no impact.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I'm finding it hard to imagine this. Sorry, no pun intended. Yeah. I'm actually finding it hard to imagine what that would be like. Firstly, I haven't heard of the condition before. But secondly, I'm struggling slightly to think what an inner monologue would sound like.
And if you can't have one.
I'm struggling to think what it sounds like now so that I can imagine, you can only imagine the absence of something if you can imagine the presence of it. And I'm thinking like if I'm walking down the street.
You're having an inner monologue because you're trying to work out what you're going to say because there's an awkward conversation coming up and you're thinking something through.
Yes, yes.
So
if you don't have that... I'm absolutely fascinated. It's also very interesting that you say that what that does is it means that horror movies don't have any effect on you. I can only imagine that that's kind of the completely opposite experience of what I have of horror movies. They affect me very profoundly, although I don't have nightmares about them. I mean, I've quoted this many times, but I remember John Carpenter saying that when he saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, he said that that movie went to the... He said, the thing with horror movies is you've got to be very careful. You can go up to a certain point, and then if you go over that certain point, you lose the audience and you lose them badly. And he said that Texas Chainsaw Massacre rode that razor's edge all the way through. And he says, I watched it and then I went home and I slept like a baby because it pacified my soul. And I understand exactly what John Carpenter meant when he said that. No, I do. It's like literally, it's like my brother. I understand what that means.
Okay.
But I'm fascinated by this because I can't imagine what that is like, and I've never heard of it before, and I think it's so interesting that you've connected it to not finding horror movies.
They might
affecting.
Be completely disconnected.
Perhaps.
It's all about causation and all that.
But if anybody else has a similar, like I said, this completely aphantasia.
Yes, aphantasia. If anyone else has that condition.
Okay.
Because Matthew in London
said... Fascinating email.
Yes. Also, I just wonder if it's something to do with not being... I can't see what the connection is between that and horror. But anyway, it's interesting, as you say, that he made that connection.
Yeah.
So if you have that, or if you've just found out that you have it because he's told you that that's what it's called, then let us know. Correspondence at
coma.com. That is a weird thing, isn't it? When somebody describes a syndrome or a, you know, and you go, yeah, that's me. And it is, again, I'll relate this to horror movies. Every horror fan I know has an experience of watching a horror film and going, yeah, exactly. That is how I see the world. Not that I see the world that I am a killer or I am a violent person or any of those things, which is what everyone outside of horror fandom thinks. It's you see a film that goes, yeah, no, that, yes, that's how I think about the world. And it's to do with, you know, existential terror and all those things. It's not to do with violence. It's to do with something far more profound.
Correspondence at kermanandmayer.com, and we'll look further into that if there are other people who have the same condition. Dear MBE and third best film critic in the world.
But first best living film critic.
Yes, which is the most important thing to say. No. So that means that you are the number one film critic in
the world.
Well, that's a pretty good place to be.
In the world.
Who needs an MBE if, on the other hand, you could be the best at your job in the entire world?
Yeah, exactly.
This is from Bruce Dahlstrom, Seattle, Washington. Medium-term listener, Vanguard Easter, Metropolitan Lithography, Duckpin Bowling Team, 10th in the nation, 1962.
Wowza.
First, thanks to the amazing and underappreciated production team. They're not underappreciated by themselves. They think they're very important. A question for Mark. Is Cocaine Bear your favourite movie featuring a bear? Alternatives are The Revenant, Grizzly Man, Paddington, Spirit Bear, The Simon Jackson Story, which features the Kermode Bear, Ursus Americanus, yes. Kermodi.
Yes, that's right.
I haven't seen
Cocaine Spirit Bear or Ghost Bear, as it's also known.
Favorite movie with a bear?
Well, I would say Grizzly Man because I think Grizzly Man is, you know, Grizzly Man has such a personal importance for me because, you know, because it was the thing that bonded me and Werner Herzog forever, and it is now impossible to read any overview of Werner Herzog's career without going, and he got shot whilst being interviewed by me about Grizzly Man, and I do think Grizzly Man is a brilliant piece of work.
We also have some questions for our meeting after we've finished recording. I could just include them now as a bonus question. Okay.
Right.
Are we all okay with the Sony Mag questions?
I think we've done it already. Were we okay?
The merch shoot.
How did we do?
Are you okay for the merch shoot?
What is that when it's at home?
It's a merch shoot then on that date. Can you make that date?
I've got no idea.
Okay.
What day of the week is it?
It's that date there.
But it's a Wednesday. Okay. Is it in the studio? Okay, in that case, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
What is the merch?
It'll be Kermit and Mayer merch.
Yeah, I figured.
I don't know what it'll
be. But what? Like hoodies?
Posing pouch. Trunks.
Can I have another one of the... So here, I'll tell you.
But no, here's the thing. So after our first live show at Union Chapel, the guy who's in charge of, is it Chili's? The beakers, he noticed that we were drinking out of plastic bottles, and he was so appalled. He made us both very nice,
beautiful
flasks. And it's black and individually named. Got a little chili there, and mine says Simon. And on the other side, it says Kermit and Mayer's take. And I've been using it ever since. Yeah. And mine one says Simon, and yours says Mark. However,
I went to a screening in Dean Street, and I had mine with me because I absolutely loved it. And I left it in the screening room. And then I rang them up afterwards. I said, look, I'm very sorry. I left a drinking bottle in the screening room. And, you know, it's easy to identify. He said, oh, yeah, what's it look like? I said, well, it's black, matte black, but it says on it, Kermode and Mayo. And he said, okay, and who are you? And I said, I'm Mark Kermode. And he went, you've got a water bottle with your name on it.
J.R. Hartley fly fishing.
Exactly. I still don't have it back.
So someone took your...
Which says Mark.
So it may well be that there is someone listening now because they're a fan.
Yeah,
with your...
Swigging from my...
Flask.
Bespoke flask.
Which actually says Mark.
Mark.
With a chili and, yes. And Kermode and Mayo's take.
So I'd like... I mean, if there's any chance of knocking up another one... It's very nice.
And the other question...
Can it say, rather than Mark, can it say, don't nick this, you thieving...
Wazzock.
well said.
Is this particular actor happy with that, on that?
Oh, I haven't...
Can you follow that up?
Yeah, I'll do it straight away.
Okay.
I'll do it straight away.
Also, is the thing okay if it goes in the... What's it? And...
No.
Later.
No. 3 inches clearance on either side... which apparently is a legal requirement.
That doesn't work.
Well.
If it's not a meter, then it isn't going to fit.
Is it fireproof?
Waterproof.
No, it doesn't matter whether it's waterproof. That's the point. Is it fireproof?
Well, it's green and it's fur-lined, which is what you asked for.
Yeah, well, in that case, it has to be 3 inches or whatever that is in metric.
It's about that much. I think we've done enough. I'll have one of those. If you can knock one of those up for next week, we'll sign it. We'll flog it at Union Chapel.
Yeah.
Thank you.